Cowboy.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Wednesday morning to you, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. All right, coming up this hour, another edition of March Memories. Let me go back in time. This week we're doing, kind of calling it like the one and dones, the teams that sort of rose to the occasion, won the championship, and didn't build a dynasty, didn't even come back and win another championship a year or two later, but had one magical run in the tournament, their one shining moment, if you will. Today we're going to be focusing on the 1994 Arkansas Razorbacks that beat Duke for the national championship, giving Nolan Richardson, the late Nolan Richardson, his national title in Fayetteville. Scotty Thurman and Corliss Williamson, and we'll talk about that team coming up. That's going to be coming up in about 20 minutes. We're going to get into the Cam Newton story again, released by the Panthers yesterday. All right, so he's now going to be looking for work. He's going to be joining Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, as veteran quarterbacks that you can sign to bring on board for whatever reason. You know, maybe it's a gap until you get your young quarterback. Maybe you want to rejuvenate Cam Newton's career. He's still young enough. They can still give you a number of good years. But it is a reminder, and it's again, appreciate the quarterbacks that you keep on your roster year in and year out for over a decade or 12 years, you know, 15 years, whatever. Keep, you know, that's something that's hard to do in this league because if you start slipping away just a touch, if your contract is too big, and if injuries plague your play, you could end up like Cam Newton, a face of the franchise, right? The most important player they've ever had, a guy that was the MVP just a couple of years ago, leading the team to a 15-1 record in a Super Bowl. And then you end up having a bum shoulder and have a hard time throwing. Lisfranc fracture on your foot that requires surgery. You miss a number of games over two seasons. Your contract is gigantic. The owner wants to go in another direction in terms of the way things are done analytically. You can find yourself like Cam Newton, a number one overall pick that's had success. He's not a bust, right? All of those things. And yet he's looking for a job today. He'll find one, but he is not going to be like a Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback that stayed in Charlotte, stayed with the team that drafted him all the way through his career. Now his agent's making phone calls. SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. How long do you think Cam Newton is going to have to wait before he lands a job?
You're going to want to
see. Yeah, but you're going to want to see him, right? And you can't.
I don't think he's waiting that long.
Oh, you might be right. But I'm wondering if you're the agent, you got to find a way to get some video of a workout or something so you can showcase his repaired foot.
Who has more upside right now, him or Jameis?
See, that's a great question, because you wouldn't think that it would be a real thought, right? Not that long ago. But the more you go, okay, wait, Jameis Winston isn't hurt. He's young. He still had 33 touchdown passes this past season. But with Cam Newton, there is so much. All right, is the shoulder ready to go? Is the foot ready to go? What am I buying here? Like, am I getting a quarterback that has the ability to play at the high level at 31 years old, a few years removed? There's one thing about Cam Newton that I've always liked about him. Scott Fowler brought this up in the in his column about Newton. Whenever Newton plays and he's playing well, like not hurt, and you could tell, like there's been times where you watched him play, you're like, man, he really struggles. But when he's on, he looks like he's having a blast out there. He brings joy to the game. Winston sometimes plays a little scared. Like Winston plays a little like where he's throwing the ball a little too, be like, ah, come on, you got to tighten that up. But that seems repairable under the right guy. Newton, it's like, look, if you're hurt, you're hurt. There's nothing we can do about it. If you don't have the ability to do the things that made you very effective in this league, there's nothing I can coach you out of. But with Winston, he's coming in with he's not hurt. He's coming in with these raw skills that you can repair with maybe with some coaching. It almost becomes better to kind of go in that angle rather than a guy you can't see to see if he's healthy enough to do the things that you want him to do if you're going to sign him. But if I'm his agent, man, I got to put him in front of something.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know he, you know, can't have people running routes for him, but there's got to be some way to showcase how healthy he is because he can't go to the camps or can't go to the team.
Well, why can't he do what Tua did?
Do that. We'll showcase him on those videos. I thought that video was great.
Yeah, you were able to see everything that he, and basically it was a combine video.
And it basically made people who scout for, like, do the mock drafts for a living saying, wait a minute, this might be a game changer the way Tua, not necessarily number one, but now all of a sudden you really are talking about a healthy Tua where those question marks were there. Yep. Now those question marks shouldn't be there based on this video. That was a great job.
I look at it this way. All these agents know exactly what NFL teams are looking for.
Sure, no doubt.
Because if they don't, then either they're a first-time agent or, you know, just terrible at their job. Cam Newton, I guarantee, does not have a first-time agent.
Yeah.
And has an agent who's probably not terrible at his job since he has a lot of money that he can go out and get something like that. You can just go out and say, okay, here's what the NFL wants to see. Here's what scouts want to see with teams, the coaches, owners. They want to see these skills done. Do it. And the luxury of the videotape is you can kind of edit it down, right?
Sure, yeah. Totally do that.
Say there was one where Tua did that and he tripped over a cone. We'll never see it.
Right. Hey, remember? You remember that? Remember that was Colin Kaepernick's big complaint. Remember where he wanted he wanted to do the workout, but he wanted his own film crew there. And the NFL said, "No, we'll film it and we'll send." And he goes, "No, because I don't know how you're going to edit it."
Yeah.
Are you going to edit out all my really great throws and just show all the ones where it didn't hit the mark? Or are you really going to give an honest video ability, you know, showcase my ability through the video?
Little did we know that what that really was a precursor of what we're doing now.
Exactly.
What amazing foresight the NFL had to say, hey, you know what? There's problems up on the horizon. Let's try this out. Let's test it and videotape it. And then see if we can really gain what we can gain from it.
Now, Newton does have some videos on his Instagram account, but they're saying, yeah, they're okay, but they're not real full what you would want in a scouting department video. But they are good. They're good to at least get an idea.
Will his style change?
That's the question.
Because, I mean, it's extremely progressive for Carolina. What if he goes and says, you know, maybe he's the, you know, like if he goes to L.A., because the Chargers need a quarterback.
Sure.
What if he goes to L.A.? Will his style change a little bit? Will it become more drastic?
Maybe so.
You know, where's another fun place to dress? I'm trying to think of different parts of the country that might need a quarterback where dressing up like that would be fun.
I think if you're Cam Newton and you're smart enough to know that anything can change in this league, I don't think you can be in this league and chart a path. Right, I think you know that every snap you are a hit away from being dealing with a new reality.
Yeah.
However, there had to have been a lot of his career where he thought, I am going to be here for a long time. Like I'm going to be one of those guys. I'm going to be an Aaron Rodgers, a Ben Roethlisberger. Well, at the time, Tom Brady, but those players that stayed with an organization until the end. He couldn't have imagined 9 years later that he was going to be kicked to the curb based on injuries / we found somebody better / we've got a new coach. We want to go in another direction. And that direction doesn't include you, Mr. Former MVP.
And that's really the thing. I mean, you know, the Brady aspect, Brady and Belichick, that's an anomaly. We'll never have that again. So we shouldn't even use them as a basis of comparison in anything. But you look at like Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's had two coaches.
Yep.
You know, but he's still the main figure of Green Bay.
Yeah,
and he always will be.
And it's not even like finding a home and landing on it. I mean, he was the number one pick.
Yep.
And he made good. Like, he didn't, there's no feeling like, well, we'll get the full read of Newton's career. He did what you're supposed to do. You, when you are the number one pick in the draft and you go to a team that needs a franchise quarterback, you need to become a franchise quarterback. You can't just get it because you're the number one pick, right? You have to go out there and be a top pick. Well, Alex Smith was a number one pick.
Matt
and he
Stafford.
Wasn't ever Matt Stafford, right? Like, you have to go out there and do some things. And Newton did those. Newton did those. He electrified fans. He sold a lot of jerseys. He was fun to watch. He later became an MVP. He later became a Super Bowl participant, even though they lost to the great Denver Broncos defense. He did what you're supposed to do in that role. The problem is it has no staying power. It doesn't last. It doesn't matter. If there is a change in direction and you're not part of the direction, you find yourself looking for work. And it's tough because, again, you're talking about teams that can't get you to their facility, that can't get you in front of their trainers and doctors and all the people that they're going to want to poke and prod you to see how those injuries are holding up. You're not going to be able to say, look, what do you want me to do? Let me show you my arm. What kind of throws do you want me to make? You're putting out a video and hoping that that's good enough to land a job. But at the same time, you do have a reputation. And the reputation is, when healthy, is good. Really good.
Yeah,
really good.
So that's why I think, regardless of video or not video, I think someone out there just takes a flyer on him. Because now,
Now
they're not having to pay, you know, part of his salary or part of the contract. They're not having to give up anything to get him.
You don't have to get $20 million.
You know, once what, because they still have to clear waivers, right? So he has to wait a little bit. So once that happens, you know, Chargers, go after him. What is it going to hurt you?
It is so bizarre, again, and is when you think about where we're at here in 2020, right? And you think about just the changes at quarterback of what we're going to be seeing, right? We're seeing Brady in Tampa, Rivers in the Colts. Two guys that were drafted 1-2 5 years ago in Winston and Mariota. Both will be on different teams. Cam Newton, an MVP, a former MVP, is going to be on a different team, right? There's all of these. I mean, it's remarkable.
Teddy Bridgewater becomes the face
Bridgewater.
Of another team.
Teddy Bridgewater, who we've said before, remember, not that long ago, Vikings were crying. The players were crying based on his injury.
Some were.
Like, that's it.
Some were throwing up.
Right? This is the most gruesome thing I'd ever seen. And it just happened in a workout. And that was, you know, we start being realists. This could be it. This could be, you know, these are the kind of injuries where a guy never comes back. Never. And what does he do? Disappears for a little bit, reemerges with the Saints, takes advantage of an opportunity when Breeze gets hurt, and then earns himself $63 million in a 3-year deal. Right? Teddy Bridgewater is back in action. I mean, just this whole Joe Flacco is looking for a job. I mean,
I thought he got picked up.
Did he get picked up?
I thought he did.
Really? That quick? He got picked up quicker than the other, than Jameis Winston? Because he was on injured reserve.
No, so, you know, no. I'm thinking. You know what I was thinking? I was thinking of Mariota.
Mariota is on with the Raiders. Yeah. So Flacco just got released by the Broncos. I mean, it's a change.
Like, and listen, I mean, former Super Bowl MVP.
Former Super Bowl champion, right?
Exactly. Nick Foles.
Exactly. All right. It's SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Again, we'll come back. We'll do the March memories. That's next on SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, when your battery goes dead, everything can come to a stop. Don't take a chance by getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. So make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, it's time for March Memories. We go back in time to bring you one shining moment for a particular program where they won it all, but maybe have disappeared into the history of college basketball. Never built a dynasty, but still had some success. We talked about Arizona at the beginning of the week. Yesterday was the 2003 Syracuse basketball team that won the championship with Carmelo Anthony. Today is the 1994 Arkansas Razorbacks, the favorite basketball team of then-president Bill Clinton, obviously because he was the governor of Arkansas. Arkansas. But they won the national title in 94, beating the Duke Blue Devils in the championship game. Scotty Thurman with the shot heard round Arkansas when he knocked down a three-pointer late in the game that gave the Razorbacks the national championship. Woo Pig Suey and the Razorbacks are the champs. They were guided by Nolan Richardson, who is known for his up-tempo style of play. 40 minutes of hell. Would you play for a coach who had a motto, who had a philosophy of 40 minutes of hell? Like if you were a young student athlete going around trying to figure out where you wanted to play basketball and the coach was known for a style of 40 minutes of hell, up tempo, caused a lot of turnovers, really, really fun basketball team back in the day. Now he had some success. This is not a team that had emerged or a coach that just found lightning in a bottle with a group of athletes. He took some deep runs into the tournament, went to the Final Four, I think, in 90, if I'm not mistaken. They also went to the Final Four in 95. But the 94 team is the one that ended up winning the whole thing. A good team that led by a very, very smart basketball coach and a historic coach. He was the first black coach to coach a major basketball team in the South at the time. He took over the job for, I think, Eddie Sutton when he had left for Kentucky. And Richardson's became the coach at Arkansas in 1985, a position he would have until 2002. There was a bit of controversy at the end of his tenure, but they did name a court after him at Bud Walton Arena. So, Bud Walton Arena, it's Nolan Richardson Court after winning the national championship. And like I said, a very good team. Corliss Williamson was the most valuable player of that tournament. And I think most of people will remember the high style of play of the Arkansas Razorbacks led by Scotty Thurman. So this was, again, if you look at their championship run, their season, they went 31-2, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 31-3, actually. They had losses during the SEC season, Alabama and Mississippi State, and then Kentucky in the SEC tournament, but beat North Carolina A&T in the opening round, and Oklahoma City beat Georgetown and Oklahoma City. Both games were pretty easily won. Beat Tulsa by a bunch, nearly 20 points in Dallas in the Sweet 16. Beat a number 11 Michigan in Dallas to get to the Final Four, and then took down Lute Olson, another good Lute Olson team that went to the Final Four that year in Charlotte, along with number 6 Duke. Now, Florida was in that Final Four as well. So you had Arkansas, Florida, Duke, and Arizona in the Final Four in Charlotte at the Charlotte Coliseum. Again, still staying within the, we talked about this in 1996 when Boeheim played at the Meadowlands in New Jersey. Boeheim won the title in the Meadowlands in New Jersey when we were playing in actual basketball arenas. This was also in a basketball arena at Charlotte Coliseum in 94. So they win 76-72 over Duke. Now, not to stray away from Arkansas for a quick second, but here's the thing about Duke. I have always said this about Mike Krzyzewski's teams. We remember Leitner. We remember Hurley. We remember the teams that won titles, right? The team that beat Butler, the team that beat Arizona, the team that beat Wisconsin a couple of years ago to win another national championship. The championships are one. The thing that I've always liked about Mike Krzyzewski and Duke is if you were to take a list of Final Four teams, like go back to maybe the 1980 or whatever, and you start listing all the teams that participated in the Final Four that particular year. It is amazing how many times Duke appears in Final Fours and in championship games in which you don't remember. They just pop up. Remember, look at what Mike Krzyzewski was able to keep rolling along at Duke in 1994, the team that lost to Arkansas in the championship. He had Christian Laettner, arguably one of the greatest players in college basketball history, for four seasons. He went to four Final Fours, playing in the national championship three straight years, winning two of those games while with Laettner on the roster. Laettner leaves. Hurley loses. They lose to Cal in his senior year in 93 in the tournament. They don't even make the Final Four. But then losing Hurley, losing Laettner, they still have a team that is, that he's still bringing in talent and keeping good players that go on to play in the, compete again for the national championship. So he's always been able to do that again because, he brings in really talented guys, of course. But when the light shines bright on somebody else, a lot of times you'll find Duke was also in that conversation. They were in the Final Four. They lost the title game, whatever it is. And it's just a testament to Krzyzewski. But this is about Arkansas. This is about Nolan Richardson, who is, you know, the guy that brought the title home. Now, Clinton was elected in 92, right? So he was inaugurated in January of 93. This was pretty quick in Bill Clinton's presidency. What a great time for the state of Arkansas. Now, I don't want to get into politics about what kind of president Clinton was.
That doesn't matter.
But if you're a citizen of Arkansas, right, this must have been awesome to be like, our governor is president and our basketball team just won the national title. Right? Against Duke of all teams.
Right. No, I mean, how many times has Arkansas elected have a president elected?
Yeah. How many you get? How many? If you were growing up in Arkansas and somebody said your governor is going to be president of the United States, would you go, oh, come on, we're Arkansas, right? We're a great state and all, but we're not sending the governor to the presidency. What, are you crazy? And probably people felt that way about the basketball team for a number of years until Nolan Richardson's got things rolling along.
All right, I had to do it. I had to look up famous people from Arkansas.
Is it a big list of people I would be surprised with?
No. It's not a big list.
It's not a big list?
No, because midway through you start to not know who.
Is it starting to reach a little bit?
Yeah. The top row is pretty good.
All right.
Bill Clinton, Johnny Cash, Lamar Hunt, Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob Thornton is from Arkansas?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
And then after that, next on the list, Scottie Pippen.
Scottie Pippen, all right.
And then this is where it starts to dip a little bit. Mary Steenburgen.
Not a bad actress, though.
Yeah, Douglas MacArthur.
Okay.
Chelsea Clinton. Bet you didn't know that.
Yeah. Why not?
That's where, I mean, you still have some people, but you're starting to, they're famous. But not really. I mean, the Waltons are from there.
Right.
So obviously,
of course.
Obviously
Bud Walton
them.
Arena.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
You know, but you start, I mean, you know, Neo, John Grisham. Yes, they're famous. Sonny Liston, they're famous, but are they, it's not like, oh my God, these guys changed the world.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Sure. Sure.
Then after that, Bear Bryant, like him.
So UCLA, didn't UCLA beat Arkansas the next year in 95?
I think so.
You got a team roll with it. And again, look, Florida was really good that year. They went to the Final Four. Kentucky was obviously good in the 90s. You know, they would eventually start knocking on the door of winning national championships. They were good in an SEC. But Arkansas was the best team in that conference that year. And you know what? It was before Florida's two-game dynasty. It was before, you know, really anybody else that made any sort of run, any sort of try to get into the basketball conversation for the conference. And when you talk about SEC basketball over the last, you know, 25 years, there are three programs that really stand out, and that's Florida, Kentucky, and Arkansas. Those are the ones, right? I mean, Auburn made a run, you know, in the Final Four last year, but of the champions, you know, that's the one. South Carolina made a Final Four appearance a couple of years ago, but that's really it. It's the Arkansas, Kentucky, and Florida. So Nolan Richardson's son was an assistant coach on the team, but he sadly passed away in 2012. So Mike Anderson was also an assistant coach of that team. He ended up becoming the coach at Arkansas. Before getting fired, replaced by Eric Musselman. So there you go. That's March memories on this date. So tomorrow we're going to have a very special March memory. We're actually going to break out of the mold.
We are. Wow.
Yeah, we're going to break out of the mold a little bit of what we're doing, and then go into sort of a very special anniversary for March Memories.
I wonder what that is.
Don't look it up. Be surprised tomorrow.
No, I won't look it up. I'm not going to show prep at all.
No, don't look it up. Be totally shocked. Those of you out there, don't look it up if you don't already know. So again, Arkansas basketball beating Duke. 40 minutes of hell. What a name. What a name for a way of
basketball
playing hoops.
Offense. Yeah, you know what? We can name some, you know, the 2-3 zone.
That's right. Right? That's right.
You can go that way. That, you know, that's safe to say, but 40 minutes of hell.
Nolan Richardson joins a group of Roy Williams, Denny Crum, Jimmy Boeheim, and Tubby Smith as the only head coaches to win at least 365 games in 15 seasons or less. So Awesome. Nolan Richardson in Arkansas in March Memories.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Michael on Twitter, weren't Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones from Arkansas? I thought so, too, and I looked it up. I looked it up. Jimmy Johnson was born in Texas, and Jerry Jones was born in Los Angeles.
There you go.
He's a Los Angelino.
How in the world does he have an accent?
I know, right? Both went to Arkansas, so I understand. I did the same thing, Michael. I thought, no, that's Jerry Jones ain't on that list. I thought Jerry Jones was an Arkansonian. Is that? I don't even know how to pronounce. I'm not even going to go there.
Arkansian.
That's probably better. That's probably better than the way I did it. He's an Arkansian. Jimmy Johnson, I was like, he probably chose to go to college. But doesn't Jerry Jones sound like he's from Arkansas?
Yes, that's why I'm so kind of surprised.
Right.
That you're telling me he's from L.A. That doesn't make any sense.
He is. He's a Los Angelino. So,
if you need other famous Arkansasians, we got Clark Duke.
Clark Duke.
You know, we can't forget about the Duggars.
Can't forget about the Duggars?
Yeah. I mean, now, there's 19 of them and counting.
Duggars. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Almost forgot who they were.
Yeah. What about Cheryl Underwood?
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, exactly. She's an actress. What about Chris Allen? You remember Chris Allen?
Chris Allen.
He's a singer-songwriter. Was on American Idol.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. American Idol.
D'Angelo Williams.
Okay, D'Angelo Williams. We know that.
You know what? Probably the most famous Arkansian that we know of. Frank Bonner. Yeah.
Who's Frank Bonner?
Oh, come on. You don't remember Frank Bonner?
No.
I'm just making sure I'm right about this.
I'm going to Google him first.
Google him.
All right. Yeah, he's the actor.
Yeah. Of Herb. He's Herb.
Of Herb. He's Herb from WKRP.
Yes.
All right. Well done.
The first TV show about radio, I think.
Well done. Yeah. Yeah. At least the best one.
So, I mean, you know what? I mean, basically what I'm saying, there's not a whole lot of famous people from Arkansas.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So
we can say it is a big deal when your president becomes.
Yeah.
Or when you're a citizen of your state becomes president of the country.
My friend who works in politics has always told me, and I just take his word for it because it's one of those things where it's not my field of knowledge. He says, you know, Bill Clinton had no intention of winning the presidency in 92, right? And I go, yeah, was because he said George Bush at the time had such a high popularity because of the first Gulf War, the Free Kuwait War. So when these guys were all like, Clinton was just young enough and he had gotten some exposure at the DNC in 88 and he was trying to get on the national scene. The idea was run. The incumbent's probably going to win because incumbents usually win. But then it's open in 96 and you have a jump on the rest of the field that's coming in because you've gotten you're governor from Arkansas. It's hard to get a lot of national exposure, but you run, you get in the pick, you get in the game, you're in the game for a while. Everybody gets to know you a bit. The incumbent wins. And then you run again. Like you drop out. You don't become the nominee. You drop out.
Do they just normally say that about, because you know, President Trump, that same thing was said about him. Like he had no intentions of winning.
Right, exactly. And then all of a sudden you end up, the process moves along. Okay. Well, that's what I'm wondering. At what point did Clinton go, wait, hold on, I can actually win this thing, so let's go full bore.
Is that the secret to winning?
Yeah, maybe you go look, like,
well, I'm not going to win.
I just want this out of the deal. I just want, I just want to, like this. Then 4 years from now, I think we'll still be 50. I'll be less than 50.
I just wanted to be on stage. I don't know what you're doing here.
Still be running. Next thing you know, he's president of the United States. So this story normally would have no interest to me whatsoever because it's a real estate deal. But when I read it, I went, whoa, this is an interesting real estate deal in sports. Right. So did you see the story? Steve Ballmer bought the Great Western Forum for $400 million. So, by the way, this made James Dolan a better businessman because he bought it, renovated it, and sold it for like eight times the amount.
Good on you, Ballmer.
Good on you, right? Ballmer buys this for $400 million. Now, I don't know much about what's going on in terms of Ballmer's desire to build a new stadium for the Clippers because he wants to build a new arena for the Clippers. So my initial thought was, oh, he must, is he going to tear down the Great Western Forum to build an arena there? No. You know why he bought this? Get this. So you've got the new Rams stadium, and then he's got the land that's down the road a bit from that stadium where right. he wants to build where the a new arena for the Clippers, right? Here's the problem. The Forum is in that same vicinity, and he doesn't want his arena, that arena, and the stadium, all different groups competing for all the other things that you have going on at arenas, like concerts and stuff, creating a potential logjam. He wants to control the venue. So he spent $400 million to buy a venue just to control its schedule, so it doesn't interfere with things that he's got to do with the Clippers. So it doesn't create a mess in that particular location of town of where that is.
I need money like that.
That's amazing to me. The idea, because you and I are 80s kids, right? I mean, we remember, and you remember even better because you're from LA, how the Great Western Forum was one of the pinnacle arenas of my youth.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of the, it was for the as dumpy and crappy as the Boston Garden was and beloved, but still dumpy and crappy, the Forum was like a penthouse compared to what the Celtics were playing
in. No, I mean, in fact, I don't remember what it was called, but I know there was a club inside the Forum.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, down like, I mean, like underneath. I mean, after Lakers
games.
Oh,
that's where Magic would hang out.
Yeah,
right?
That there was a club. They would literally, they had an area in the Forum that was turned into a club after Laker games. And it was, I mean, strictly VIP.
That's awesome.
I don't know what it was called. I just remember hearing stories about it. Like 30 for 30s and things like that. That's what was going on in the Forum.
It's amazing because, again, look, the Garden, if you remember the 80s Celtics and Lakers games, the Garden was, I'm going to be flat honest with you guys, it was a dump. It was a beloved dump, but it was a dump. It smelled like urine. I mean, it was nasty. But there was an aesthetic feeling of okay, you know what, but this is ours and nobody plays better in this than Boston, right? Like, you'd go there and it was like, I remember being a kid, my father took us to a game and my brother and I were sitting in our seats and I'm playing with this screw that's just screwed in the banister and I'm just like a kid and I'm watching the game but I can't keep my fingers off this screw and I'm screwing and it pops right out of the concrete. I just thought, what have I done? Like, is this going to fall over? I'm not kidding. You'd get your drinks and you would be going to your seats in the kind of the higher end of the Garden. And you'd be like, I'm going to fall and tumble all the way down on the floor. I'm going to fall onto the court. I am so right above the court that Larry is going to ask me to get up and move, even though I have a broken back. Like, I'm going to fall right down on top of them. There was a night that the lights went out playing hockey. There was a night that it was so hot that the Lakers were just pouring sweat out of their body. And then we'd watch these games and we'd love it because the parquet was all like had dead spots on it and gaps the size of like a couple of quarters. And then the series would switch to LA and the fantastic, fabulous Forum. And it was clean, and it was neat, yep. And it was filled with stars, what? And it was had all these lights.
Here's what I found it. It's called it was called the Forum Club.
The Forum Club.
And it was Jerry Buss that created it, and it was the ultimate sports bar. Athletes unwind at the Forum Club after games, and celebrities are often present.
Nice.
Jerry Buss had a private dining room in there where he would entertain his celebrity guests.
Sure.
So that was, I remember seeing that after games, that was the place to be. It was strictly VIP though. You had to know someone who knew someone to get in there.
This is one of the premier arenas of my youth. I remember when I was with one of the basketball teams, we played the LA Stars. Scott Brooks was on it, by the way, head coach of the Wizards. Scott Brooks was on, they played at the Forum. And I remember going, oh, this is awesome. Like, but when I moved to Vegas, I had to go to the Forum. My wife loves hockey, and I got tickets. I was given tickets to see the Kings play somebody at the Forum, and I had never been there before. And I was like, well, I have to go to the Forum at least once in my life. This is the arena I watched for years in years play the Celtics in the finals. And it's and now to think that Ballmer bought this just to control its concert schedule.
And he's not moving the Clippers there?
He's not moving the Clippers there.
He should. He should renovate the inside. I mean, keep the outside the way it looks.
So,
but I guess in a way, I mean, you always look at this like that's kind of like the building the Lakers built.
So here's the how the article reads. This clears the existing litigation that was standing in the way of Ballmer's building a new state-of-the-art 18,000-seat home for his team, according to the Clippers. The resolution of outstanding litigation was the condition of the sale. MSG, which owns the Knicks, was embroiled in a legal battle with the city of Inglewood and Ballmer over the building of a new arena in close proximity to the Forum. James Dolan, MSG's executive chairman and chief executive officer, alleged the city of Inglewood violated an agreement not to allow competition to the Forum in such close proximity by working with the Clippers on a new arena. So if you're Ballmer, how do you get rid of this? You buy the building. So it's like, well, we have the building and we want to use it to fill it up with concert dates and all that other stuff. And Ballmer's like, well, I got a new state-of-the-art facility up the road that's going to be used for the Clippers and other things too. And James Dolan's like, well, you're not going to build that because I have the city is giving me that right in here. And Ballmer's like, okay, what do I have to do to get this to go away? $400 million and you can have the building and do whatever the hell you want with
it. But you forget the main word after you say $400 million.
Which is?
Cash.
Cash. Oh, right. Cash.
Cash.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's fantastic. Not, hey, we're setting up a payment plan. It's just like, you want me to cut you a check now or should I do it a week from now? It's up to you.
My God. That's amazing. But oh, so I have to ask you this real quick.
You know what that could do, Tony? That could give 400 people $1 million.
That's awesome. All right. So here's my little Forum story for you, Mr. Los Angeles.
All right.
And I this is another one of those. I was told this. I don't know if it's true. I just take the guy's word for it because I have no other means of finding out if it was true or not. So back in the late 90s, my wife and I were living in Las Vegas, and I said we took a trip to Anaheim / L.A. because we were going to go to a couple of hockey games, Disneyland, and enjoy the beach.
Yeah, yeah. Typical L.A. trip.
Right. So we drive down from Vegas, and we check into the hotel. We both took Thursday off, so we got there by mid-afternoon, got in the hotel, hung out a little bit, then we're on our way to the Forum for that night's hockey game. So this was before GPS and all of that other stuff. And, you know, looking on the map, I'm like, okay. Yeah. So I asked the front desk guy. I go, what's the best way to get to the Forum? We're going to the Kings game tonight. He goes, all right, here's what you want to do. You want to take this, this, and this. Then he says to me, in all seriousness, he goes, I'm going to make sure you get this straight. He goes, if you miss the exit to the Forum, do not get off the next exit.
Yeah.
He goes, you have to go another exit down. You can't turn around and you do not want to be there. And I go, okay. He goes, trust me. So just go to the next exit down. That's where you can just get off and turn around and get right back on the highway. But I never looked into whether or not that was true.
Oh, no, I can. Yes, it's very, very, it's very much true. Yeah, I mean, honestly, you would have been fine.
Okay, but he was, been fine. He was, but, he saw me and my young wife and was like, do not get off the next exit in Inglewood.
You don't want to.
And I was like, okay, I'll make sure.
There are some shady figures. Just picture not as wholesome as Chevy Chase in the back streets of St. Louis.
So funny that you said that because that's what I always thought about. Yeah. Just rolling down the window going, hey, do you guys know where I can get to the Forum?
And yeah. It just wouldn't be as wholesome.
Right.
And it might cost you more than $10.
Right. What, for free? That's funny. I'm glad I got to ask you that question. All right. It's SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony.
Yeah, we were talking about the sale of the Great Western Forum. And that's, again, if you kind of grew up in the 80s and you remember Lakers-Celtics, a kind of important venue in the history of the NBA, just for that rivalry and what it meant, and just the contrast between that building and what the Boston Celtics played in. And don't get me wrong, I'm not here to, I mean, listen, everybody from Boston
will tell you that the place was a dump, but it was loved. I mean, the old Boston Garden was loved because there was something really remarkable about that place. It really, Larry knew all.
Wasn't the floor coming up though?
Yeah. The floor was like the parquet. It was really funny. Unless you got close to see it, the parquet was not an even.
Yeah.
Like evenly put together. There were gaps. I mean, I remember one television, one channel in Boston showed there was they put like three or four quarters together and showed there was how big of a gap was. Larry, whether it's an urban legend or not, Larry apparently knew where all the dead spots were, where not to dribble the basketball on the garden parquet. It was kind of, but it was like some of my best memories of going to games, we went to, but as a kid, we went to Fenway Park a lot, but going to the garden was great. I mean, again, it smelled like you would not believe. I mean, it was really nasty, but it was awesome. Saw the, game five of the 82 NBA Eastern Conference Finals there, the CU Sunday game. It was one of the highlights of my youth growing up. Saw some Bruins games there. You could buy, it's one of those arenas where a lot of you older people out there know this, that there were arenas that used to get built where you could buy obstructed view seats, where you'd be like behind a pole, but you're in the building. That the garden had a lot of those. Like the tickets were extremely cheap, but you know, if you sat in it, you couldn't see. Robert on Twitter actually sent an article on the Palace. That was that's another one. The Palace at Auburn Hills. That's another one from in Detroit. There was a couple of them in my youth that were like that. But the Forum, I hope you treat it well, Steve Ballmer, because that's still a classic. So, Michael, the garden wasn't that big of a dump. The rats were well fed. That's a very good point.